Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Chad here, your host for this weekend edition, also your host throughout the week on our website and podcast, the KE Report. It was a busier week for us as we just got back from that conference the week earlier and started to set up some calls with companies we met with. More company updates are going to be coming in the next few weeks. So please, everyone, be sure to go back through the week, check out our daily editorials and those company updates. On this weekend show, we're going to start off the show by focusing a fair bit on the U.S. equity market, simply because I think some of the weakness that we've seen creep into the markets over the last almost 2 months now really needs to be paid attention to in a bigger picture sense, making sense of the fact that these markets didn't quite make it up to all-time highs. They had a nice run, but if they start rolling over here, well, it can bring back in that more bearish or bear market outlook. And in the back half of the show, going to switch our focus more to the energy sector as well. Oil has been a standout. We're kicking off the show with Rick Bensignor, president of Bensignor Investment Strategies. Rick writes the institutional newsletter, Supposedly Irrelevant Factors. This is read by some of the most successful hedge funds in the world. On the retail and individual side, check out the website In the No Trader. This is where Rick has three products, a monthly report called the 7-11, where Rick picks no more than 7 of the 11 spider ETFs with the goal to beat the S&P. And Rick has consistently beat the S&P since the inception of that report. He also has a weekly report called the Tactical Trader Report and a daily report called the Daily Tip Sheet. So depending on your time frame, you can follow along with Rick and his wide range of market comments. Rick, as I said, I want to start off with U.S. equity markets, because let's just go back to the beginning of 2022, right when the S&P rolled over. It was 9 months of almost straight down action, and then right at the start of that fourth quarter in 2022, the markets rebounded, and they rebounded for, you can make the argument, about 9 months, and in these last 2 months, we've seen a little bit more weakness coming into the markets. Rick, when you look at a big picture chart like this and see that the markets haven't been able to get back to all-time highs, does that lead you into the more bearish camp here, just on a general time frame sense?
Yeah, Corey, it does and it has. We were looking for topping action over the summer. We got it. I made it very public that I personally sold out of my spider purchases, the SPY, you know, the S&P 500 tracking ETF that I had bought last fall at about 427. I sold those out at 450 over the summer. I told people, all my clients, whether it was the retail clients or the institutional ones, that, you know, this is what I'm doing in my own account. And to me, nothing speaks louder than somebody putting their money where their mouth is. So I made it very clear that I was selling out at the time at S&P 450, or let's say Spider 450, approximately S&P 500, 4,500. And I am actually looking to replace those a little beneath yesterday's low. So yesterday's low, this week's low, was the same as the low back in June, just five S&P points difference. So a potential double bottom at the same place of where technicians would say is the neckline on a head and shoulders pattern. So in early June, the market rallied and kind of rolled over just for a week. Then you had the bigger rally into the July peak, which sold down also to near that June low. And then we did it. We rallied into the September high, and then faded again over, or even the August high, I should say, and then faded again to that same level this week. So you have a definitive head and shoulders pattern there. You just haven't had yet a break of the head and shoulders pattern. I'm thinking that we could get to 42, something like 42.75, fairly close to yesterday's low. So possibly a false breakdown, one that gets people selling into smarter buying. So I'm thinking 42.75-ish or so is the place here where I will probably buy back some of those 450 sales in the spiders I did earlier. But the bigger place and the bigger picture, if interest rates still trade higher, get above 4.5% on the U.S. 10-year, stay above there, because that's kind of where we got to yesterday, and bond prices are up a little today, so yields have fallen. If we can get above 4.5 and stay above 4.5, then I think that the S&P is likely heading towards 4,100 to 3,950. And that 150-point range is where I will most likely put in a fair amount of cash that I raised last year back into the market. So I'm thinking that, yes, we have important support right against this week's low. It could, if it breaks, your classic technicians are going to say break of a head and shoulders pattern. They're going to measure the height of the head, and it's going to send us down also into that 4,100 to 3,950 level. Those targets are coming to me from other models. The fact that the head and shoulders pattern would measure down into that level is just another reason that I think that's an important level going forward if we ever get there. But I don't have a problem buying back the spiders that, you know, I sold at 450 under 430. They are in my retirement account. So anytime I can kind of add, instead of pure buy and hold for the long term, when I can kind of tactically make some improvements to the simple buy and hold of the spiders that I've had there for years, I like to do it. And it has, I can tell you honestly that it has been a very long time that my spider trading in my IRA account has not worked out for my benefit. There's only one time I can think of in the last 15 years that I ended up paying higher than I had sold them out for. So generally, you know, I like to keep my long-term investments as such. I occasionally tweak, and that's what I've done here also in the spider. So big picture, I have never once been in the camp that the S&P was going to make new highs this year above the 4,800 level that they made essentially January 1st of 2022. I have not been in that camp at all. And if we break here, we'll break another few hundred S&P points.
Well, Rick, just to that point, looking at the big picture in the markets, you know, a lot of people got animated by the rise they saw in the markets earlier in the year. It has been really stuck in a range-bound trading, as a lot of markets have. They've kind of been oscillating back and forth, and I appreciate you outlining some of those targets to the downside if the head and shoulder pattern were to break down. That also correlate with the other patterns you see in your models. But just from a big picture standpoint, for people that are trying to look at what is the trend of the market, was this possibly just a really big bear market rally within potentially a longer bear market that we see if those levels that you outlined break to the downside? Or do you think that if it does get down to that 3,900, the 4,100 level that and you load up there, that that's where a new bull market would begin from?
I think that's probably, I don't have a reason right now, Shad, to think that we would go back to last year's lows. Look, the drag here is going to be the interest rates. And I will concur with the first statement you made that this is probably a very large rally that we've seen to shake out anyone who thought that the market could go down again. But I don't yet have a good enough reason to go out with a call to say that we are going to take out last year's low. So I'm not in the ultra bearish Morgan Stanley, Mike Wilson camp. I am certainly not at all in the bullish fund strat Tom Lee camp. I think we spend some time in between those lows from last year and the all-time highs also from last year. And what I think most investors don't have the right grasp on is that the interest rate environment has so secularly changed over the last couple of years that all the people who are in the buy the dip camp for equities, that has worked for so long because you were in a bull market for bonds. But you are no longer in a bull market for bonds. You are actually in a very significant bear market. And because of that, the constant buy the dip mentality is not going to work. And I think that we could easily be in for a couple of years of a bigger trading range bounded by last year's all-time high and last year's probably, we'll call it a cyclical bottom, and spend some time for certainly the next 6 months to a year in between there, because people need to readjust their whole investing process because of the higher interest rates. When you can get, let's say rates get to 5%, the U.S. 10-year gets to 5%, and the short end, let's add another 50 to 100 basis points above that. If you can get a guaranteed 5% on a 10-year, a guaranteed, let's say, almost 6% on a 3 or 6 month T-bill, that really makes the risk of the equity risk not such an attractive thing to do, to get the standard 7 to 9% return that you get over time in equities. I think a lot of people will start going into the bond market when you see these higher rates. So it takes a lot of juice and underlying buying away from equities. And I think right now, the people who paid crazy prices for NVIDIA and let's call it the Magnificent Seven over the last few months are going to pay the price of coming in so late to those rallies. And you need to get some type of shakeout there. They're not going to give up this year's gains. Things that were up 30, 40, 50%, some of those names, they're not going to give up all those gains. But could they easily give back 20% of those gains? For sure. Maybe even 30% of this year's gains. So I think you've got to take a little step away from I'm a long-term investor type plan and look a little bit, man. I'm not saying everybody should be, you know, short-term day traders or three-week swing traders, but I think you need to realize that the bigger picture has to have changed by the fact that the interest rate environment has so dramatically changed. And that's the picture that's the piece of the puzzle that too many investors are not getting a good grip on.
Fair enough. There is an alternative, isn't there, Rick? For the first time in a long time, people sure can make money in safer, higher yielding instruments. What does this mean for general sector rotation? I guess touching on your 7-Eleven report, do you think investors should be focused more on dividend paying stocks, more on safer assets, more or less on these growth tech stocks? How does it all filter into this whole sector rotation?
Well, so this is interesting because you've got the 11 macro sectors to the market. And that's, you know, the 7-Eleven report invests in 7 of the 11, well, XLK, XLE, XLP, right? The macro sectors. But I think the best performers are going to be the ones who dig into the macro sectors to find the best places to be in within the group sectors within that. So, you know, if you take something like financials, which have been kind of a dog this year, and they've rebounded a little bit recently, but if you just make a call on financials, you're going to have a much harder time figuring that out as compared to perhaps even putting on pair trades using, let's say, ETFs within the financial space. You know, insurance is doing a heck of a lot better than regional banks. So I think those who do their homework and look within the sectors, you don't have to get down to the individual stock level, but if you can figure out which subgroups are going to do better within the larger macro group, I think that's where you're going to see the real victories coming. I can tell you This has been a very difficult year for the street to outperform the S&P. The 7-Eleven report is only mildly up this year. It's somewhat insignificant what we're up. It's about 0.5% through, you know, this calendar year. So it's not anything like we've seen prior years. And the street is very similar here in the sense that very few PMs are beating the market this year. And that can easily persist because of the huge change that the interest rate environment has given to equity holders. And the smartest ones will be the ones who figure out how to really play this game. If you just, in fact, look at a trade, I'll tell you now, for any of you who are going to listen to this show when it is broadcast, pull up a daily S&P chart on whatever charting system you use. And you can easily make the camp. If you look at just from last October's low to where we are now, you can easily make the case, and you don't need to be much of a technician at all to do this, but simply if you have any semblance of reading a chart, you can see that somewhere in and around, let's just say round numbers, 4150 or so, is where the breakout happened in early June. We had multiple tops in and around 4,100 to 4,150 all year long. You then get that big surge in June, and now since the middle of June, the head and shoulder pattern, the distribution. So you had a lot of volume here over the last 2 months distributing this rally. You had big volume up until that 4,150 level, mostly between 3,800 and 4,150 since the October low was made. The one place that the market hardly traded was where it traded in June because it zipped higher. So what you're really talking about is the potential that if we break under 4,300, you can easily see why we can get down to that range I was talking about before. Let's even call it 4,150 to 3,950. And that's what I think likely happens because smart money has been selling into this rally for the last couple of months. And you can see that there's this one area of a couple hundred S&P points that hardly traded this year. And that's likely what needs to be filled in and do a fair amount of shaking out the volume that's going to come in. If we break under this 4,300 level, the volume that's going to happen in between 4,300 and let's call it roughly 4,000 or so, is going to come from the longs, the late to the game longs who get forced out of their holdings. But longer term buyers know that we broke out from somewhere, you know, 4,100, 4,150. And that's where those who are longer term bulls are going to take advantage of the price declines to bid into those who are forced out to sell because they got greedy and they got long at the wrong time and place in this market.
Well, Rick, if we look back to what happened before that breakout in June in the S&P, we had that mini banking crisis from, let's say, March to May, where we saw one bank, then another, you know, start capitulating. That had people concerned. But then when it seemed like the coast was clear and the Fed had backstopped and some of those banks got taken over by larger banks, it seemed like the crisis was over. And that kind of gave a green light also to the markets to get a little bit more speculative. Well, what if the higher for longer rates and continue tightening, and as debt rolls over, we continue to see some pressure in the macro side, and the financials themselves maybe still have some skeletons in the closet? Could that be a factor that rears its head again maybe later this year, the beginning of next year, that would put a little bit of wobbling into the markets again?
I do think so, Chad. I think that the mega bulls, the ones who think that they look at the history and they say, oh, equities can handle higher rates. Let's look over the last 30 years and see what happened when rates moved up. That is a very short-sighted view because that was during the midst of a bull market in bonds. So anytime rates moved up, they eventually fell again because you were in a bond bull market. So buying the dips and saying the stock market can weather the higher rates is purely based upon a 30-year bull market, or almost, let's call it almost a 40-year bull market from 1980 to 2020. Yields fell from 15% to 1% during that time, 1.5%. Sure, stocks can weather that. If that's no longer the case, then simply buying every time the market pulls back and saying, oh, we can handle higher rates, I think is foolish. Because when's the last time we had to deal with rates, a 4.5% 10-year? 2007. You know what happened in 2007? It was the top of the market before the whole great financial crisis took place. October of 2007 was the high. So we're looking back now, what, 15, 16 years, and people going, oh, yeah, we could weather rates just fine moving up. Yeah, because they only moved up fractionally for a very short period before they fell again. This is a whole different game now. And think about the impact of not just to corporations, what the higher borrowing costs could mean. I have a whole bunch of kids who are in their 20s and 30s. At some point, they're going to be home buyers. I feel bad for them because right now with the 10-year at 4.5%, you're probably pushing close to 8% on a 30-year conventional mortgage. If rates get to 5%, go add another 0.5%. That means they're paying their monthly payment for just, not including taxes where they live, but just the pure mortgage piece, is significantly more than double the cost of what that monthly interest rate cost them than it was just a couple of years ago when everybody had all the time in the world to refinance at 2.5% or less. And most smart people did that. So if they were walking around with a 4.5% mortgage rate, they were able to get it down to 2.5% or something darn close to that. Now, the younger generation who wants to follow in the footsteps of every other one in the last 100 plus years of buying a home, the whole American dream, right? You graduate college, you get a good job, you get married, you buy a home. That's not going to be so easy because the cost of it is going to be ridiculously high compared to what we've seen over the last few years. And that's just another challenge point for the housing market. I've actually, in the 7-Eleven, not the 7-Eleven, in the weekly tactical trade report for the last 11 weeks, we've been short XHB, the ETF for home builders. And actually covering it today. And, you know, I can anticipate when some of these things are going to turn or exhausted in price. And it really is a shame for the younger generation. But when we think about this as far as if they've got to spend that much more on a mortgage each month, then that's way less money they have for discretionary spending on anything else. How does that not affect the economy when a whole new generation is going to be squeezed on what they have to pay just to own a home?
Just continues to filter through the system then, doesn't it, Rick? Unfortunately, it also sounds like people won't be making money hand over fist in these markets, but you can be, it sounds like, still an active trader. Overall, though, very much it sounds like you are on the same page as the Fed, and I think a lot of other traders, where higher for longer is going to be the trend here. But hey, we'll watch and see what happens with these markets. As I pointed out, the rollover has started. We'll see where it takes us. And yeah, the bond market, where yields are, is so important to follow in whatever sector you are investing in. Rick, it's great chatting with you. Thank you so much for joining us back on this show and focusing so much on these markets and tying it all together. So, hey, Rick, we'll chat again with you next month. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend, great rest of your September. Rick, thank you, as always, for your time.
Thank you, guys.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.